Call Laura now. 1-855-40-LAURA.
Taste of your love. Sweet and wild.
Valentine's Day is next week. Have you still not done anything about that? Well, don't wait until the last minute. You end up giving just an ordinary expected gift. A gift from Sherry's Berries will show her that you planned ahead. You find the perfect gift, and she's going to love them. I promise you. All my friends and family who've had the great pleasure of getting Sherry's Berries love them. And the berries are dipped in white milk and dark chocolatey goodness. You're going to love it. $19.99, that's where they started Sherry's Berries plus shipping, or you can double the berries for just $10 more. And you need my code to take advantage of this deal, the code Laura. So just go to berries.com. That's berries.com. Use my code Laura. I just hit that little microphone in the top right-hand corner. Type in Laura, and then you'll get access to that special deal. So $19.99, you can do that, plus shipping, or you can just, for $10 more, you can double the berries. It's awesome. Again, berries.com, click that microphone, enter Laura for Valentine's Day.
This is a complete victory for the state of Washington. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, in a unanimous decision, effectively granted everything we sought. We are a nation of laws. And as I have said, as we have said, from day one, that those laws apply to everybody in our country. And that includes the President of the United States.
It's a political decision, and we're going to see them in court, and I look forward to doing it.
So you believe the judges made a political
decision?
We
have a situation where the security of our country is at stake, and it's a very, very serious situation. So we look forward, as I just said, to seeing them in court.
You are listening to the Laura Ingraham Show, 855-40-LAURA. No big surprise, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals does what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals does. It legislates. They're legislators. This is not the way the framers conceived of our three branches of government, where legislators are trumped by unelected judges, and where legislators are trumped by judges, or presidents are trumped by judges who make national security decisions, which essentially is what's happening here. Joining us now, Pat Buchanan, one of my absolute favorites, former advisor to, I don't know, 17 presidents. I don't know how many, like, in the end. Hey, Pat, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Not surprised by this court ruling. I went back, Pat, and I was listening to old interviews that Judge Bork did on his book, Slouching Toward Gomorrah, and his discussion back in 1996 of why it was incumbent upon the legislative branch to actually circumscribe the jurisdiction of the federal courts.
Well, I just somehow I didn't hear your question.
Oh, okay. I was just.
But there's no doubt about it. Yeah. If you're talking about the what's called the Stripper Amendment, the Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution gives Congress and the President the power to restrict the jurisdiction of the federal courts. And what we have here basically is an assertion by the 11th Circuit and by that one judge out in Washington that the national security decisions on borders of the President of the United States, advancing the national security of the United States, are subject to veto by single federal district judges. Now, this is an assertion of power over presidential policy that cannot be allowed to stand.
What would you recommend, an understanding the dynamic as it exists today, what would you recommend that the president's team do here?
That they should rewrite the order. I really think they ought to go up to the Supreme Court on this.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, let's find out if the Supreme Court is going to assert superior authority over the national security decisions of the White House and the President of the United States by federal courts, so that, in other words, they become the dominant power. I mean, who was it, Lincoln, whoever said the one who decides what the law says, he's the lawgiver.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that this is something that Judge Bork understood, you know, 30, 40 years ago about what was happening to the federal courts. They were becoming like the law faculties of universities and colleges, because they came out of those law faculties, and they were seeking the approval and the imprimatur not of what our framers understood the meaning of the Constitution to be, but they were seeking the approval of the editorial boards of major U.S. newspapers.
And the problem really lies, though, with the executive branch and with the, especially with the congressional branch, that will not stand up to the U.S. Supreme Court, that will not stand up to court decisions, won't restrict their jurisdiction. Let me tell you a story. It's in my upcoming book. I was in a meeting with Nixon and Connolly back in, I think it was November of 1971, where the Supreme Court heard a case on whether Nixon could set off a 5-megaton explosion in Amchitka to test his SDI. And the court ruled that he could. But Nixon told Connolly that if the court had ruled the other way, he would have set the bomb off. Now, in other words, at some point, an executive has got to defy the judges on these matters. As I've got in my column this morning, you know, Jefferson not only refused to enforce the Alien and Sedition Acts, his party impeached Samuel Chase,
yep,
who had conducted one of the trials. These people acted. I mean, Lincoln was about to arrest the Chief Justice of the United States, who said he didn't have the power to suspend habeas corpus. So you're going to have strong presidents, or frankly, you cannot rely upon the Congress. It is a cowardly institution. It simply will not protect its own rights. It surrenders its control over the currency. I mean, the president, I mean, its power to declare war has been surrendered to the president. It really doesn't want responsibility.
No, which is why we still don't have a replacement for Obamacare. I mean, they don't want that on their shoulders.
Sure, they don't want to make a decision where they go home and half of the folks are saying we're going to throw you out.
So
this is what they're interested in: self-preservation. I guess, and the bottom line, as are we all.
Yeah, getting reelected. Well, again, it goes back to the desire to be loved and to retain power, not the desire to do what is right. And a good friend of mine, who's a very prominent attorney in Washington, really brilliant, when this Seattle District Court stay was put in place and the ruling was against Trump, he said to me, Trump should say, make us. He should order Homeland Security to continue the ban in place.
Yeah.
That, and everyone's like, that would be a constitutional crisis. We already have a constitutional crisis.
That's what you want. I don't say it's not a constitutional right. Your friend is exactly right. You have to at some point defy them. Let me give you one other example. When Mitt Romney, the Massachusetts Supreme Court, the first one, voted 4-3, declared gay marriages to be legitimate marriages and ordered the state to hand out marriage licenses, I urged Governor Romney, just say, I've read the Constitution again. It's not in there. I'm not going to do it. The state legislature and I are going to pass the law saying your ruling does not stand. Defy the court.
Well, and I think because there's been no will to do that, the courts have taken more and more power.
Then it's a natural inclination. They put on those robes and all of a sudden they rule our lives. I mean, my friend down there, Quirk, a law professor, he wrote about the book on judicial dictatorship. I mean, it was an excellent book, and he argued his whole life for the Stripper Amendment, as he called it. Article 3, Section 2, just restrict the review jurisdiction of the federal courts and the Supreme Court, which is right there. Congress has the power right there in Article 3.
Well, I think this was in order a couple of decades ago, at least.
It began with Brown.
Yeah,
Brown was a very, very popular decision, but it began with Brown.
Well, and
overturned an 1896 decision.
Right, and that I think gave a lot of judges the understanding that if you get the accolades from the academy and from the media,
sure,
then you're doing the right thing.
The court then proceeded. Look, they said, the Establishment Clause says that, you know, we have to purge all replicas, prayers, any kinds of even pledges of allegiance and things like that from the educational system of the country. And they asserted this authority. Then they said, look, all state legislatures have to be on population alone. And so they kept making all these decisions to remake America. And the court and the Congress of the United States simply accepted it. As did presidents. Excuse me, I heard Nixon say on some of these busing decisions, You know, I just said, look, don't cut off the funds. Send the funds to the school districts. And President Nixon said, as I point out in this book, we can't defy the court. We can't defy the court.
Again, like it's an imperial judiciary. Like, so is there anything the court can do? I mean, I think we saw...
Well, you have to defy it.
Jeez.
It'll keep doing it until it's slapped down. Look at FDR had the same problem. Excuse me. But he had the problem. They were declaring his New Deal ideas unconstitutional, so he decided he's going to pack it. And the court had great prestige then. He's going to add one justice for every justice on the Supreme Court, I think, who was over 70.
Right.
And he was going to add up to six justices. And he did it in 1937. And it was a huge firestorm that broke his coalition. And he lost, I think, 72 seats in the House in 38. So it didn't work there. And presidents have forever been apprehensive about defying the court because they're not sure they'll win in the court of public opinion.
I think a lot of this goes back to something that I know, Pat, you've written about so eloquently over the years, which is this belief that, and I know we're jumping from the law for a moment, but in multiculturalism, that all, you know, all ways of thinking are equally as good, that all cultures, and I'm talking about our belief in the rule of law and
sure.
obviously coming from British common law and so forth. I want to play a soundbite again from this 96 Bork interview. Let's listen.
Multiculturalism is a theory that all cultures are equal. And of course, there is a, in the schools, there had been an effort to prevent people from assimilating to the dominant American culture and to retain separate cultures, Hispanic or whatever, or black and so forth. It is not true that all cultures are equal. They may be entitled to respect, but we're talking about preparation for success in a complicated society like ours. All cultures are not equal.
And yet, you know, that's what kids, it's beaten into kids' head today. No, the way you're thinking about a representative democracy, no, you have to, it has to be outcome-based judging. You have to get to the outcome, regardless of how you have to get to that outcome. It's outcome-based judging. And that's what other countries do, and that's what we have to do.
Well, there's no, what Bork says is correct, but all cultures are simply not equal. In the United States or the West, ours is, of course, rooted in the Judeo-Christian tradition. It goes back to the 2,000 years at least. It produced Western Europe. It produced the United States of America. It was basically provided the basis of morality and law and all the rest of it. They weren't all equal. And the idea that they are, and this is, Bork is exactly right. There's an idea of equality, which is simply, I mean, you can say, people have to have certain rights that cannot be taken away from them because of their religion. But the idea that all are equal is an absurdity.
And egalitarianism.
If you're a Christian, do you believe that Christ was the Son of God? No other religion claims that.
Pat, the Gorsuch comments to a Democrat Senator Dick Blumenthal and also apparently to Ben Sasse, calling Trump's comments disheartening and disillusioning, demoralizing, whatever. You know, we can quibble with whether he said it about Trump. Or, I mean, it seems to me he said it about Trump's comments. Come on.
I think Gorsuch's comments were disheartening and dismaying, I'll say. I mean, why did he do that? I mean, what Trump said was, look, he got a so-called judge. So what?
Big deal.
I think that Gorsuch should not have taken that shot at the man who appointed him and went on the line for him. And frankly, it suggests, to me, an effort by Mr. Judge Gorsuch to get along with the people that hold his face.
Concerning.
In his hand.
It concerns me greatly because there's another person that we know that likes to get along, and his name is Anthony M. Kennedy.
Exactly. They want to be popular. They want to be popular. I think, with due respect to John Roberts, I think John Roberts on that decision on Obamacare
did not want
to be really one of the front four in the Scalia court. He wanted it to be the Roberts court. And so that's why he took that independent stand in his mind.
Well,
I think that's one of the motives.
I think that whoever gave the green light to Gorsuch in that White House counsel's office to go ahead and put daylight between him and Trump, that person shouldn't be working.
Do you think someone did that in the...
Yes.
In the
100%.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. Said it was okay to do that because it'll make you look independent.
Pat. Call and say,
Because it would make him look independent, in other words. Okay, you want to do, yeah, we get it. That'll actually be good. It, just stupid
you're
strategy.
You're letting the guy score off your own president?
Dumb.
To show his independence?
Dumb. It's dumber than dirt. I mean, look, I'm not in there. I know it's easier when you're on the outside, but it's just like, I mean, I talked to a couple appellate court judges about this over the last 3 or 4 days. They were like, that's one of the most horrifying things. I can't even imagine saying something. The question's asked, what do you think about Trump? You say, I don't think it's appropriate for me to discuss what the chief executive says on political matters.
I'm a man of strong opinions, and I'm delighted he appointed me.
Exactly.
What are your questions about the law, et cetera?
Well, another friend of mine said, emailed me and said, I'd pull the nomination, put Pryor in there. Let's just pull the nomination.
You know,
we're done.
I hate to say it. That was exactly my thought last night. I would said, Gorsuch out, bring Pryor in from the bullpen.
Yeah, let's go. Now we're cooking with gas. Now we're going to get the real jurist in there. This was just a warm-up act. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's why I'm
not in there. Pat, we loved your piece. It is so important for people to understand it's time to hold the courts accountable. And that means you can circumscribe their jurisdiction. Pat, you're just brilliant. We love you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend. You take it easy.
All right, you too.
Be sure to not shop. Don't shop at Nordstrom.
We didn't get into that either. Oh, my God. All right, Pat, we appreciate it. I'm not a big Nordstrom's fan anyway.
The Laura Ingraham Show.